Gavrilik, who's unmarked as he streaks away into an open goal.
Hit the boundary line.
Oh, the post is broken. Matthews hit it.
Boy, oh boy, wow, wee. He shoots towards goal. What more can you say?
Hello and welcome back to the Herald Sun Footy Podcast. I'm Mick Warner, back with Glenn McFarlane. And Macca was saying last week how many big news stories there have been around, and another one broke late last week involving Taylor Walker, the Adelaide Crows former captain, and the racism story. It was an incredible story and a very powerful, I thought, statement from Tex Walker last night when I first saw it. But then as the dust settles, you sort of wonder if that was the right strategy for Taylor Walker to do a video rather than actually front the cameras and answer the hard questions.
Yeah, I agree with you, Michael. It's it was a strange one, I thought. And you have to look at the calendar and think it's 2021. I cannot believe that this is still happening in AFL football. We don't excuse it from fans, and it's hard to believe we can excuse it from a player who has played with some of the great Indigenous players of all time. But I, like you, I thought it looked a bit stage managed. The video message that went out last night, I didn't particularly like the way it was done. I would have loved to have heard from Robbie there as well, Robbie Young, who was obviously the person who was vilified by Taylor Walker. I would have loved to have been able to, rather than just him sitting at the back, would have loved him to have some sort of say in it as well. It just didn't, I don't know, it felt a little staged for me. Like, clearly Tex is struggling. There's no doubt, Mick, that Tex is really struggling with this, as he should with this. But, it didn't really gel that well with me, I don't think.
Can I just say, Macca, when you call me Michael, it's a bit off-putting. My mum calls me Michael.
I feel like you're at school.
Everyone else calls me Mick. If you could just roll with that, that'd be great. But, they Adelaide Football Club, I mean, not being in South Australia, they strike me as quite an arrogant club in dealing with these type of things. You know, they had the camp fiasco. I didn't think they handled that well, and the PR around that well at all. The Talia brothers was another example, that investigation. They're a huge club, a very powerful entity in South Australia, but I just wonder about the way, and maybe it's that having that power base is the way that they arrogantly respond to some of these matters. And I thought Matthew Nicks spoke spectacularly well. That's the way correct that everyone at the club should be conducting themselves.
I'm just writing down Mick, M-I-C-K, definitely. I completely agree. Like, I'm really not sure what they've got to be arrogant about in what's happened since, the 2017 grand final, to be honest. You said that they didn't handle the camp well. They handled that appallingly, I thought. And I think you make a really good point about Matthew Nicks. That actually got me a little emotional watching that. Certainly the Taylor Walker thing didn't. It jarred on me a little, but the passion that Matthew Nicks displayed, and the fact that he had to ring up some of his former teammates and talk them through this issue is just, it shows the depth of feeling. And I'm not sure a video like that really did much good. And full credit, we don't know with Robbie Young in terms of whether, he was asked to do that video or whether he put his hand up to do it. And if he did, full credit to him. But I didn't like the look of that. But as far as arrogance go with the Crows, like, really, they don't have a lot to be arrogant about, I think. So that's where it's a bit bizarre. And you look at someone like Tony Armstrong, who, watching him articulately express how shattered he feels in this instance as well with Taylor Walker, and also Eddie Betts, who, put it so beautifully, just with a simple message on his wristband on the weekend, no room for racism. Eddie was doing it pretty tough late last week before the game against Gold Coast. And, they've got a lot of work to do, the Crows, and Tex has got a real lot of work to do.
Yeah, and I'll go this far. I reckon, and again, we don't live there, but I think the Port Adelaide Football Club brand has gone way past Adelaide Crows. And that is incredible when you think back to the Tarpaulins and, the days when Matthew Primus was coach, and that the club was really on its knees. And full credit to David Koch and Ken Hinckley and that playing group, they are running rings around Adelaide Crows at the moment, even though the showdown was pretty close.
Yeah, it was close, but off the field, they're
running
rings.
Comes down to governance, Macca. Governance.
It does. And governance counts. It really does. There's absolutely no doubt about that. And you've got to give, you're right, you've got to give Port Adelaide a big tick. I never ever thought we'd get into a situation where Port Adelaide is looking like it's a better run club than Adelaide. Adelaide had historically been such a good club. When I say historically, since the start, pretty much had been a really good club in that sense. But clearly things went awry and Port have actually done some really great things. But I think Adelaide can, with someone like Matthew Nix there, I think they're going to obviously make a really strong stand here, and they need to. Do you think Taylor Walker, what does he need to do now, do you think, Mick, to get back the respect that he has admitted that he's lost?
So I still think he needs to do an all-in press conference where, you know, you just stand there until the journalists have run out of questions. And yes, he's wounded. You could see that in the video, but it's just something that he needs to do. And I don't think it should be in, early next year when he comes back from his break or whatever. But Lee Matthews was fascinating on 3RW on Friday night and said, when he brought it up himself, the incident with Neville Bruns, he said, when you are in the eye of the storm as a player, it's hell. And you wonder whether you're ever going to come through the other side. And Alan Jeans came around to his house and said, Lee, this can't be, because I think it was Lee's final season.
It was footy that year,
but he said, this can't be your final act. You have to come back and play. You can't be remembered for this. And I think that, Tex Taylor Walker, he'll play again next year, I assume, if Adelaide want him. As horrible as it's been, I think it'll be another wake-up moment for the country in terms of how far we've got to go with bigots and racist comments. Yep.
It is quite extraordinary. We obviously had the incident, and it was an online trolling incident of Alia after the showdown game, which just shows how far we've got to come and got to go in this footy club. I call him Tex before. I probably should call him Taylor Walker. Were you a little bit concerned with the Players Association referring to him as Tex in their official their release about the incident?
I thought that the AFLPA response was a bit soft compared to the way that they've spoken about imbecile fans making comments on social media. Now, that's probably understandable in one degree because he's one of their members, but it just shows you the difficulty that the AFL, the conflict that they sometimes have. But I think Dangerfield's been pretty strong.
He has.
In doubling down and condemning it.
And that's good. We need to be doing this. Absolutely.
Well, Macca, let's move on to the Carlton Football Club, another team that's in disarray. And of all people, it was Neil Mitchell, the 3AW top-rating morning breakfast host, who went with the news that Carlton has refuted, but it does seem inevitable that he'd been told that David Teague has all but been told that he will not be the coach of Carlton next year. This review that they launched started about 15 weeks ago, and in hindsight, geez, they've made a mess of another season, Carlton, haven't they?
They have absolutely made a mess of it. The players shouldn't escape either, but the club has made a mess of it. I never like external public reviews into footy clubs during the course of a season, because in a sense that they could have played finals this year, Mick, if things had gone slightly different in a few games here. They probably didn't deserve to play it, but I don't like it. It feels like now it's a ticking time bomb at Carlton. It's just a matter of when. It's really grim for David Teague, but not just for David Teague. I think there'll be some other casualties as well. The board's obviously going to meet on Thursday to discuss the elements of that review, but it's just been handled in a really messy way, I think.
The review started out as having nothing to do with the coach, they told us. Kane Little said he would be the coach next year. But then it's almost like it's all about David Teague now. And clearly, I know what you said about the players can't be let off the hook here. And, if they'd beaten the Suns, they were still in finals. contention, but it's that defensive transition again. It's the patches of the game where they're just too easy to move the ball through. And I guess that is squarely on David Teague. But I've been saying for a long time, the scrutiny should be on that board. And in fact, it is in some quarters on the board with Vince Lotrisano, the prominent Carltonian, ex-Carltonian, pushing for an EGM.
What are the hopes, Mick? What are the hopes of an EGM there, do you think?
Oh, I think they're absolutely intent on it. And the basis of it is, A, you know, that 20 years of failure by the board, hiring and firing Brett Ratton, hiring and firing Mick Malthouse, Bolton, now Teague, lots of CEOs and lots of football bosses sacking Silvani. They've certainly shuffled the deck chairs around the Carlton board, haven't they? But the one constant has been the board. And I think that the tipping point for Lotrisano and his group was this special meeting that they tried to call for August 17 for the voting on a series of changes to the constitution. Now, it's a bit boring, a bit dry topic, changes to constitutions. But when you're a club like Carlton and you haven't had no success and you try to sneak through some changes, according to Lotrisano, giving more power to the board. Yes, it was also recognising women and First Nations people, but a lot of the fine print was not properly sold to the members, this is according to Lotrisano and his group. So there will be a petition. There is a petition for an EGM, and I think at this stage we're headed for certainly a petition for a spill of the board. Whether the members at the meeting would vote for it, I don't know. The one thing that Carlton have up their sleeve is I'm sure that they are very busy trying to identify if Teague is not the coach, landing a big fish, Macca.
Historically, that's what the Blues have done. They'll always tell you that they don't, but they do love to bring in that White Knight coach, don't they? They certainly went a different path with David Teague, but that's what they'll be trying to do. Footy, you know, boards, you know, since the day dot, have based themselves on, we can get the best coach who's going to win us a premiership. And that's what they'll obviously try and do. Collingwood's doing it in a slightly different sort of way, aren't they? Given that there's a board issue there as well, but they're sort of taking their time and doing their due diligence about a coach and a replacement for Nathan Buckley. But there's no doubt in my mind that Carlton will be looking at the biggest. I mean, Alistair Clarkson, if he's not coaching next year, there's something wrong. If you can't convince him to coach whatever club it actually is next year, there's something wrong, you would think. How often do you get a chance to get a four-time premiership coach who's coaching almost as well as ever from an external point of view, don't you think?
Who do you think will be coaching Carlton and Collingwood next year?
I'm not sure about Collingwood. I can't get a quite read on it at the moment. It's funny, we talk about Don Pike being right in the mix as well. And he was obviously at that, as you called it, the arrogant Adelaide Football Club during that particular time. So I think he's right in the mix. We don't know what Brad Scott's doing. You know, we're fascinated by what's going on there. Surely Carlton have got to be looking heavily at Alistair Clarkson. There's absolutely no doubt in my mind that that question has been asked. If it hasn't, there's something wrong that it hasn't been asked. What do you make of Ross Lyon? You know, he's effectively ruled out of the Collingwood job, but would you say he's completely ruled out of this Carlton job? We know that he's had history at Carlton before, but you're not sure?
Some people tell me that he's completely ruled out, and other people tell me that he's not ruled out, and you just don't know who to believe in football anymore, do you? But
you don't.
I would think that they're going to go for a big name. Like you said, they've had Bolton and Teague, and now they'll go for the biggest fish that they can land, and Clarkson and Lyon are the two. And I don't know what Brad Scott's up to. If it's not him, you would think that Pike would be a good fit at Collingwood. So. Brad Scott, of course, is in for the footy operations job, and they're sort of fairly different jobs, I would have thought. But I reckon if Brad Scott wants the footy ops job, he gets it, doesn't he?
You would think so. You had a really interesting story today, obviously, about Josh Marnie potentially being a candidate for that particular role. That's interesting, given, you know, he could have gone in a different direction. He almost had the Melbourne CEO job at one stage and didn't quite get that. And now has obviously moved on to Essendon. He's clearly on a short list of candidates, Mick.
Yeah, I think they rate him at AFL House. They put him on the competition committee, which hasn't met for about a year, but it still exists, Macca, trust me. And I'd be fascinated to see whoever does get the job. The other names that I've heard are Rob Old, who's sort of a general manager of competitions in there at the moment. And there was one other. Who was it?
Yeah.
Anyway, the question for me is when that person gets it, I think they want to fill the AFL football operations position by grand final day. Damien Hardwick, who's made a few headlines himself lately, some people say he's become bigger than the club itself, is talking consistently in his post-game about how different the game looks, uncontested marks. I think we spoke about this a bit last week, but I'd be fascinated to know what the philosophy of the new football operations boss will be in terms of the look of the game, because I'm not sure that the game that Hocking has left behind is in all that good a shape.
No, and I think it's probably been masked a little bit by COVID in a way, hasn't it? That, you know, we're grateful that the footy is on. But if you listen to talkback radio, if you listen to people talking around the traps, they've got some real concerns about the way the game's actually being played at the moment. We really would love more goals. That's not happening. We've made some other rule changes and there've been some, you know, some offshoots to that probably weren't, you know, thought about in the first place. So, it's an intriguing situation. What do you want, number one, from the man who takes on that particular role, Mick? Is there one thing that you would want specific ahead of anything else?
There is, and I want to talk to you about it after the break. Well, Mackie, you asked me if there was one thing I'd want to have changed under the new football operations boss. There's several, but the one in that immediately jumps to mind, and we've got the Toby Green tribunal case tonight, being Tuesday night. How far apart is our match review officer, Michael Christian, and the sort of consensus in the industry and the tribunal too, with the Fritsch case, for example, that Michael Christian thinks Toby Green should get 2 weeks. Others, the chorus in the football media is he'll get off. Bailey Fritsch got 1 week that was overturned. Buddy Franklin got a week that was overturned. I just find it odd that we can have these two different disciplinary bodies with totally different perspectives on what's a suspension.
Exactly. And there's a chasm between. It's not just a little difference. It's a chasm between the two. And if we're confused and the public's confused, how do the players feel? They must feel really confused as well. Like, that's the frustrating bit. We talk about, and we saw, you know, Daniel Venables retire and you know, we've seen a lot of players in recent times actually retire from the game with head injuries, and yet we're seeing these instances taking place, and the match review officer will give them a week or 2 weeks or whatever, and then go to a tribunal, and then it's cleared. I did the Buddy Franklin tribunal. I still sit here and think I cannot believe he played the following week. I sat through the hearing, and it was only by luck and good grace that there wasn't a really serious injury. You know, to Ryan from Fremantle, that and he gets off and he plays the next week. So I think we do need to work out over summer. It's too late to do it now. It's too confusing. But we need over summer, whether it's some sort of forum or whether it's some sort of crackdown on what we can get away with in footy. And this chasm between the MRO, you've got to have a tribunal. Don't get me wrong. You have to have a tribunal and they're allowed to have a different viewpoint. But when it's this far apart of viewpoint, it's confusing for everyone in the game.
Yeah, but if you think about it, we've been having this conversation for 50 years. I know they're tightening up the rules slowly, but you know, to try and it is, there are a lot of grey areas, of course, in footy. I mean, I thought the Dangerfield grand final elbow on Vlosten, for example, should have been, now whether he should have gone for it, it just seemed to be like there's nothing in it. Move on. Whereas, you know, he did knock the guy out with an elbow. But Toby Green did raise an elbow. Did he need to? Could he have fended off with his hand?
Well, we keep saying that it's a football act, Mick. But if it's a football act, we need to change that football act. We've got to take it away from that. We can't have situations where that could have been a really serious injury for Patrick Dangerfield. And I do take your point. I think Danger should have been suspended for the one in the grand final. That's just me. But again, when you say we've been doing this for 50 years, that's true. But we didn't know about the implications of serious head injuries. We didn't know about CTE back then. We do now. This is a time bomb going forward that we need to sort of get some clarity on, or else it's going to keep happening and we're going to have so many different more cases into the future.
Yeah, and you mentioned Venables from they played in the premiership as a, what he would have been, 20 years old when he played in the premiership. He's retired. We're starting to get to
it.
Do you want me to take you through it? The retirement season is upon us. Mark Murphy, the Carlton, have announced will retire after his 300th game. Credit to Mark Murphy because he had to play in some pretty ordinary days at Carlton. I remember early in his career when they played in a final, which they lost narrowly against West Coast. You know, you thought that he would play in a premiership, but it didn't work out that way for Mark. But then there's been Lin Jong, famously toured Collingwood's facilities. Do you remember that?
Jay Clark story? Jay Clark exclusive.
Yeah. Tommy Rockliffe, who was a captain and one of the probably top 20 players in the comp, maybe even higher at his peak. And Chris Mayne. Remember the famous Buckley? I don't know what he was thinking, Bucks, when he almost wanted to tear that contract up. But he's been a good servant for Collingwood.
He has. He has, and he's another one who's had some concussion issues as well. But it is retirement season. And just on Mark Murphy, I'm so glad he got to the 300. There was that little fear that he might not get there. He seriously deserves it. He had every chance, Mick, to leave that footy club. And we know what a mess they've been for such a long period of time. He could have gone to a successful club. He may have even played in a premiership. But you know what? He didn't. He stayed. And he deserves a massive tick for that. So there'll be plenty more. I reckon we've had fewer retirements at an August, we call it retirement season. I reckon we've had fewer than we've had in the past. Now, at this sort of stage of the year. So I reckon we're going to get a flurry really soon now, aren't we?
Now, Mac, you're on a different topic. Because there's 18 teams in the competition, the chances of having to talk about an issue relating to a team that you barrack for or that you played for, being a former player in the media, was never good at maths, but I think that's 1 in 18. You saw Caro had a bit of a crack at Matthew Lloyd when they were talking about Essendon on Footy Classified, saying that he had his black and white slippers on. Take me through your experience of, and obviously you're a Collingwood supporter. No one knows who I barrack for. I've tried to keep that a secret, and I think I've been pretty successful in that.
What a load of garbage that is.
Your experiences of barracking in the media, barracking in the press box, for example, back in the old days when we actually used to cover matches.
Yes, it was taboo to barrack in the press box, and it was actually drained into you as a young kid going in there, that it was this revered place to go into the press box and you don't barrack. But I did come into, you know, my first year, and this was tough, Mick. My first year was 1990, so I don't know if you're familiar what happened in 1990, but the black and white team did break a premiership hoodoo of 32 years. Not that I can remember.
I blame Peter Sumich for that.
that was an interesting game covering that game. So I'm a young kid actually covering that game and covering the 1990 grand final and trying to keep my emotions intact. And it's really tough because, you know, people know who I barrack for, but I always try and do it without fear and favour and try and do it the right, you know, without fear. No, with fear. Anyway, you know what I'm talking about. So in that 1990 grand final, sort of, you know what I'm talking about. In that 1990 grand final, like it's there's a lot of pressure on. This footy club's nearly ruined my life with all these close losses in grand finals. And I'm coming up and I'm trying to be good in the press box. And Rowan Connolly, who is a massive Essendon supporter, is going nuts for Essendon early. They kick the first two goals. Paul Salmon looks like he's going to be John Coleman. And so I'm stressed out, as you could believe, trying to cover the game. And then there's a brawl starts at quarter time. And there was almost a brawl in the press box because someone had a crack at Gavin Brown. And I love Gavin Brown as a player. And I started to say something. And I thought, I'm going to have to sit down in my seat. So we know that Gavin Brown got knocked out. No one got knocked out in the press box. But I've seen a couple of blues in press boxes. I won't give any names away, but I've seen a couple of blues in press boxes over the years.
Do you think there is bias in football reporting because of people's affiliations with clubs, i.e., you know, people in covering federal politics could be accused of barracking for one of the political parties. And do you think the public pick up on it?
I think the public probably do. Probably they pick up things that are not there. And I've always tried not to do that. You know, a couple of great stalwarts of the press box that I remember, Bruce Matthews and Mike Sheehan. I don't think anyone knew who they barracked for. And I remember Bruce Matthews. I got a little bit emotional in the 2010 grand final after the week after the draw when the Pies won.
Hang on, what do you mean you got a bit emotional? What do you mean emotional?
My kids were there. My kids were there, and I was really happy for them. And I remember Bruce Matthews gave me the stony look as, mate, you don't get emotional in the press box. You don't do that. But I do remember an instance, and it was the Sunday Age used to have a column called the Pissed Column. I said that correctly, I think. where in about 1990, it was a back page, 1990 or 1991, they did a piece on who the journos barrack for. And he was at the time, the most controversial thing. They outed who every sports journalist and football reporter barrack for. And I think, and they also gave you a passionometer as well about what your passion levels were. I think I was okay. I think mine was Collingwood at 5, but I think Rowan Connolly might have been around about the 10 off the chart for Essendon. So
it was controversial at the time. Why don't we do the passionometer?
We should do it again.
On our podcast. So we'll come back after the break. I want to talk about lightning strikes. Now, Mac, we had the extraordinary situation on Monday night where the Melbourne West Coast game at Optus was delayed for upwards of 25, 30 minutes over a lightning strike. Good move to get the players off, of course, but got me thinking about other times we've seen football matches delayed. And when I was a young fella, I famously remember the St Kilda Essendon match being postponed because the lights went out and they shifted the game to
Tuesday night.
And I actually rang, I don't know what year it might have been, first year uni student or in year 12, and I rang up the ABC talkback show the next day and said, what are they going to do here with Brownlow votes? And I think it was Crackers who said, Mick from Mount Eliza, you have opened up Pandora's box here. And I thought, geez, I might be a footy journo.
That was the turning point of your career.
And as it turned out, James Hurd came back and played in the last quarter on the Tuesday night, but didn't do enough to get Brownlow votes, I think. But I digress. What are some other instances you can remember of games being delayed, postponed, cancelled, abandoned?
There's been quite a few, if you look at it. And that 1996 one at Waverley, I was heartbroken too, Mick. I was a young guy trying to make my way in the world. And I remember Scott Palmer saying, you got to do the game at Waverley. And I go, no, the other one's a big one down in Geelong and West Coast or Geelong and Brisbane or whatever it was. And sure enough, I missed history by going against the boss. And the boss, who was my boss at the time, Scotty Palmer. So I cover that game. The lights go out at Waverley. It's one of the great stories of all time. That night, Scott Palmer still took time out to ring me and says, you missed the big story, pal. And he was right. So there's been plenty of others. We actually had a grand final postponed, if you can believe it, one week in 1923. Yep. So Essendon played Fitzroy, and there was so much heavy rain in Melbourne that they had to cancel the grand final and play it a week later, which was on Caulfield Cup week. So that would have been a busy time. There's been quite a few others. Remember the pig on the ground? We had to halt proceedings on the ground when they released the plugger pig at the SCG. Buddy's first game for the Swans was in 2014 against the GWS Giants at Giants Stadium, and they had to stop the game in the first quarter because of lightning, of course. And one of the best, I reckon, is a couple of others. Do you remember Brunswick in the VFA?
Yeah.
Famous footy team in the VFA in 1900. They had to forfeit a game because the bloke who was meant to bring the uniforms and the jumpers to the game got on the wrong train line and went to the wrong ground. So they had no jumpers, so they had to call it off. And then Richmond, this is Richmond. You'll love this one. We need Brett Bartlett to confirm this or not, but there was a game in 1898 in the VFA, allegedly, where they were playing Port Melbourne, pretty tough side, Port Melbourne, where a number of Richmond players, maybe 11, refused to come out after halftime because of the bad behaviour of the Port Melbourne players. So, gee, there's been a few.
I remember a cricket match where the swarm of bees invaded the ground.
Oh, yes.
Had to be called off. And what happened with the rampaging elephant at Arden Street? Did they get the game away that day?
Yeah, that was part of the pre-game, sorry, halftime entertainment that who would have thought that was a really good idea to take an elephant to a – it didn't quite work, did it? Didn't catch on.
Your story about Waverley just reminded me, actually. I was about – I think I was as a cadet journalist, and this would have been – about 1999, 2000, I was sent out. Remember they used to do VFL games on a Monday night at Waverley? And it was telecast and there was absolutely no one at the ground, but it was on TV. Anyway, I was sent out there to do one of these games and I was sitting in the press box. I was the only one there and sitting in the corner and in walked the Hawthorn match committee. And I don't know whether they just thought that I was just some pimply-faced teenager and, you know, just totally had no idea who I was. But they just started their selection for that weekend's game. I remember thinking about the way they were talking about players like Chance Bateman and thinking, geez, this is pretty red hot. And right at the end, one of the guys came up and said, "Hey, mate, where are you from?" I said, "Oh, from the Herald Sun." And they're like, "Oh." Anyway, unfortunately, I was too inexperienced to realise what I had there. But anyway.
Walking into good stories. As Scotty Palmer used to always say, you never get a story in a milk bar.
No, you got to get out of the office, son.
Get out of the office.
One last one. Essendon, do you think that they have stumbled across some gold with those players walking out last year and Danaher and Fantasia? That suddenly they're back in town, the Bombers.
Yeah, they are. I want to back them to win a final, but I want to back them to win a final next year, not this year, because they may not make it this year. But, gee, it's almost been the accidental rebuild, hasn't it, in a lot of ways. And I was thinking that Ben Rutten, I was not convinced that he was taking over a club that was going forward. I thought that might have been going the other way. But what they've been able to do is very astutely realise, okay, we're going to lose these three players. We're going to make the best of the situation. Now, we know the kids that have actually been able to get, Perkins and Cox and Reed, but how they were able to get Peter Wright for a fourth rounder, Nick Hine for two fourth rounders that St Kilda didn't utilise, it's just astounding. I think Gold Coast are paying most of Peter Wright's money, aren't they?
Yeah, Todoro cops a lot of flack, and I guess when you haven't won a final for 20 years, that's probably fair enough, but it's been a pretty good list build by stealth, as you're saying. You know, I don't think they're going to do serious damage in the finals, but it's not a very good – there isn't a team that I'm thinking, wow, these guys are just hard to beat, or, you know, with Richmond falling away and not even probably going to figure, it's anyone's premiership. That, you know, I'm not convinced about any – I don't trust any team.
No, I agree with you. And you can look at the betting, and usually at this time of the year, you probably do know I don't mind a bet here and there, Michael, Mick, but generally not on footy. But you can still get 420 Geelong, 450 Melbourne and the Bulldogs, $8 Port Adelaide, $9 the Lions. I don't think no one really knows who's going to win it. They've all got the little issues. Like, I think Geelong's the best team in it, but, gee, they can throw in a shocker. And the teams they've beaten, if you look at, they lost obviously last weekend, but then prior to that, they'd beaten Essendon, Carlton, Fremantle, Richmond, who were struggling, and North Melbourne. Like, they hadn't beaten anyone in that sort of window there as well. So there's a question mark on them. Melbourne were really good on Monday night. I really like the way, even though they nearly got run over in the end. And the Bulldogs, Josh Bruce is going to hurt. So
massive, yeah.
And the Lions are just coming good at the right time, but gee, they needed to.
That pre-finals bye will be crucial again. It gives the teams in the bottom half of the eight a chance. Someone could get on a run and do a Western Bulldogs of 2016, but maybe you're right. Maybe Melbourne's the one I'm starting to trust, but they fluctuate a bit with their form. And then you got the COVID factor. We don't even know where these games are going to be played, Macca.
Exactly.
That's what we want. Bit of a grandstand finish to another AFL season.
Exactly, mate.
All right, mate. We'll talk to you next week.
Good on you, Mick. Thanks, mate.
Go and dust off your Collingwood jumper, mate.
I won't say which club your jumper you're wearing right now, the polo.
Peninsula Old Boys. See you, mate.